Up next?
Today we have members of the Rap Road Historical Association, starting with Miss Stephanie Woodard. All members of the Rap Road Historical Association that celebrate and commemorates the black settlers who fled from the Deep South in the 1930 to 1940, fleeing the Jim Crow sharecropping system. Sharecropping was an exploitive tenant farming system used by white landowners to enslave blacks in the South from Reconstruction up into the 20th century.
So, Ms. Woodard, thank you so much for joining us here at 105.3 FM. Tell my listeners a little bit about the Rap Road Historical Association.
Well, thank you for having us. We are very appreciative. The Rap Road Historical Association was created as a result of the Rap Road Historical District that is located out in the Pine Bush area, not far from Cross Gates Mall. Many people probably have driven through our community and didn't realize exactly who we were and why we were there. Our primary mission for the association is to encourage people to embrace the history, the long-term history of the people who migrated from Shubuta, Mississippi, most people did. There were a few that migrated from Florida and from the Carolinas, but also we work to try and help as much as possible the families that live out in Rap Road, how they can keep their homes and preserve the district itself.
So Shubuta, Mississippi, I've heard that name many times being a local Albanian from the area. Tell me, you know, I did some research on Shubuta, Mississippi, and, you know, the research I found online was talking about the Hanging Bridge, which was located in Shubuta, Mississippi, and that there was had been unfortunate long tradition of lynching black men. They even said, what I found online is that they lynch pregnant women and they lynch youth. And that was the environment in which the Shubuta folks were fleeing to come north.
Yes. In Shubuta, we are, and that community itself is very well known for the lynching pieces, the lynchings that did occur. We actually had Professor Jason Ward come to speak to us about a book he read about the Hanging Bridge. And the whole book is about how actually Shubuta, Mississippi was one of the last communities in the South to stop lynching. Lynching occurred, I do believe he has in his book, almost into the 1950s. So it lasted a pretty long time. He also writes in his book about the civil rights movement as well. Clark County, where Shubuta actually is, resides. We were also one of the last counties that allowed for voter registrations and voter rights. So it's very Jim Crow. It's very South. Mostly anything anyone's ever heard about African American history in the South, it's a lot of it did occur in Shubuta. So when people left Shubuta, Mississippi, they left under duress. Some were still sharecroppers. My father grandfather was still a sharecropper when he left the South. And if anyone knows anything about sharecropping, as long as you owned debt, you had to pay. And what they used to call stacking the books kept you in debt forever. And when people left out of Shubuta, Mississippi, they were leaving debt. So in the eyes of the government in Mississippi, they were considered criminals. So a lot of people, when they left in the 20s, the 30s, and the 40s, they left with a criminal record, and they could not return back to Shubuta, Mississippi.
Can you talk about what the stacking the books was?
So stacking the books meant that no matter how much you paid to a farmer, they would always say you owed more. So no matter how meticulous you were in keeping your books in terms of how much you paid back to the landowner for your crop, for the crops you were growing, or the food that your cows or chicken, whatever, ate, they would always say, oh, no, you still owe more. So what would happen as people would tend their own piece of land on a farmer's property, and then they would pay for the rental of having their crops grown there, they would still say, you still owe us more.
So the sharecroppers, for my listeners, just to sort of give it a little bit of context, the sharecropper didn't own the land. he was leasing the land. And he paid the fee for that.
Yes.
And then he would grow his crop and sell it. But he had to pay, maybe he had to pay for the shovels or the mule or the plow. So, you know, you never got out of debt. You just continued to stay in debt. And so it was a very oppressive, exploitative system. Miss Bardaquez is here. We're so glad you're joining us. And Anita Neighbors is here, also members of the Rap Road Historical Association. Miss Bardaquez, tell me a little bit about how the folks from Shibuti, Mississippi got together and said, we need to start an association to sort of remember our folks.
Okay. Well, it was the year 2000, I believe. And my Aunt Emma Dixon wanted to know how we got to Rap Road. There were all kinds of rumors about how we settled in the pine bush. And she wanted to find out exactly how we got there. So she was... you know, asking her mother and different family members on Rap Road. And it just so happened a young woman by the name of Jennifer Lamack, who was a graduate student at SUNY Albany at the time, had an assignment to work on an African-American community. And one of the assemblyman in Albany suggested that she get in touch with Emma Dixon. Mm-hmm. Emma Dixon and Jennifer teamed up. Mm-hmm. And when they teamed up, it was off to the races for them.
Right.
Jennifer wanted to do oral histories with the residents of Rap Road, and Emma knew that they weren't necessarily going to be open to doing and sharing information with a stranger. So she had to kind of prep them and prepare them to get them to agree to let Jennifer interview them.
So you were sort of able to get all of these folks together to talk about the story of the Rap Road families that came up from the South, fleeing Jim Crow, and settled in the Rap Road area. Mm-hmm. For my listeners, Rap Road, Rap Road is right near Crossgates.
Okay.
It runs from Washington Avenue Extension. I think it runs over to Central Avenue. Does it run to Central?
No, it's between Western and Washington Avenue. Yes. When Rap Road was originally established, they started building their homes in the community in the early 40s. Mm-hmm. And there was only one way in and one way out. And it was just a little narrow dirt road. And
that was the country back then.
We called it the country.
It was the country. It wasn't the city. It wasn't downtown Albany.
We called it the country.
It was the country.
When people made reference to it, it was out in the country, the Holy Land, the Promised Land.
The Promised Land.
Because all the families were church members. Mm-hmm. And they bought parcels of land.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead, guys.
Oh, no, I'm just, how did they wind up finding this space in Albany from Shibuta?
This is what happened. Lewis Parson, who was the elder, had come north. And when he came north, he teamed up with three women that were in a prayer circle. And he and those three women started a church. They started the church. And as a result of them starting the church, he wanted to grow his flock. So in an effort to grow his flock, he started going back to Shibuta and recruiting family and friends to come to Albany.
So I was told orally, I don't know if this is true, but maybe you can correct me if it's not accurate. I was told that he would load up a large car and sneak into Shibuti, Mississippi by night to get these sharecroppers to bring them. Because as you said earlier, Stephanie, they would be considered criminals. So they just couldn't leave town. It's not like you and I, Guy, we can get on a bus and say, I'm going to New York City. These folks could not leave because the sharecropper had that sort of control over them.
Because they felt that they owed them money.
Right.
So if you owe money, you're indebted to them. And the only way you could leave was on a Saturday night, and you left it in the middle of the night so that on Sundays, that was their day to worship, so they weren't missed. By Monday, when they were supposed to report back to the fields, they were well above the Mason-Dixon line headed to Albany.
I mean, this sounds just like slavery to me.
Well, in a manner of speaking, it was. In a manner of speaking, it was. And I just a little sidebar. You were talking about supplies and my grandparents told me the story of how my grandfather would go and get supplies. He would get seed. He would get whatever they needed to plant their crops in the spring. And then the idea was after they planted their crops and they harvested them, a portion of their crops would go to the farmer and they would keep a portion of it. They also had to settle up for the seeds and whatever other supplies they had.
That meant you had to pay.
You had to pay. And that's why, as Stephanie said, stacking the books. Because my grandmother only had a sixth grade education, but she kept accurate records. And she knew what they owed and what they didn't. And there was a discrepancy between my grandfather and a farmer. And he took my grandfather's dog because he owed him money.
Now, Guy, that's grounds for fighting.
My grandfather did just that. He went back and stole his dog back. But as a result of that, because it was still Jim Crow.
Right. He had to leave town, I bet.
They came looking for him.
Oh, my goodness.
And he ended up leaving Shibuta, going to Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
So, sister, Miss Neighbors, how are you connected to this story? So I've got three wonderful people here. Tell me, how are you connected?
I'm connected to the story because I was part of the migration from the South to the North. I was 6 months old when my parents came to Albany in April of 1937. They settled in Albany on the south end of Albany. And the south end of Albany was urban and they were not used to urban living. And a lot of the parishioners threatened to go back. And that's when the minister, Reverend Parsons, along with Tolliver, purchased the tract of land on Rapp Road. So the parishioners that they had brought up from the south could have their gardens, their pigs, their whatever they had in the south, they could have when they moved to Rapp Road. And that's how the Rapp Road community started.
So these were folks who were used to living in a rural community. They were farmers. And so they wanted no parts of city living. So they went out to what you call the Promised Land, which was Rapp Road, and built their own homes, continued to farm, and you know, sort of recreated that Southern feel right up here in New York. Amazing, an amazing story. Now, is it true that your story has been, there's been a documentary about the Rapp Road Association and those folks? Tell me a little bit about how that happened.
Yes, the about two summers ago, my nephew and I started filming the community, and because we wanted to start building for our library, so we would have not just oral, but we'd have visuals for our library. So we did a little documentary. We had some oral histories from some of the original settlers on Rapp Road that we incorporated into the film that he did. And so we were able to create this documentary. And the documentary is, we are still working on it.
Okay.
It's a continuous thing. We haven't quite got it finished, but we're working on it. But we were fortunate enough to have it aired last year at this time. Mm-hmm. On WMHT.
Yes.
They aired it for us.
In memory of Black History, African American History Month.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yes. What I wanted to tell you about Rapp Road, Juanita was saying how they farmed and they raised livestock and they hunted. Rapp Road, if you looked at photos of Rapp Road and you looked at photos of Shibuda, Mississippi, you couldn't tell them apart.
Really?
The terrain, the trees, the roads, they all looked alike. So it was hard to differentiate between Rapp Road and Shibuda, Mississippi.
Also, as a result of Jennifer Lamack's work that she did out in Rapp Road, there's also a book that she wrote as part of her dissertation called, and I always mess up the name, Southern Life, Northern City. And it also documents a lot of information about what people, when they moved from the South to the North, what they experienced in the South End. And you will get a real good feel of what Juanita was saying in terms of how the housing and living, a lot of statistics was given. One of the things she indicates in her book that prostitution in the South End when they arrived was just as high as it was in Chicago. That when you looked at the census, that's what a lot of women put down as their occupation. So it was a really dismal area, especially if you're coming up from the South as God-fearing, and then you walk into this type of living.
Red light district.
Red light district.
That's what they used to call it.
Yes, and they when people threaten to go back to what we all know was even worse, it created a really nice community out in around the Pine Bush area.
So how many people would be a part of this association? If you counted the number of families that are here in this area that trace their forefathers or their lineage back to that group that came up from the South, what kind of numbers are we talking about? 2, 10,
many.
20,
many,
100?
Many, many.
Hundreds.
Well, I'll give you an idea. Right. Every year, the third weekend in August, we have a family reunion. Last year, it was our 62nd family reunion. I believe there were close to 200 people there.
Wow.
Those were just some.
Some.
Those were just some.
Of the names. What are the names that we're talking about? Woodards?
We're talking Woodards. We're talking McCann's. Uh-huh. We're talking Johnson's. We're talking McCarty's. We're talking
McCall's.
These are all old African-American Albany names.
Yes.
People know these names if you're from this area.
Well, the interesting thing is we have T-shirts with a family tree on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be at a given place and someone will have one of those T-shirts on. And I'll say to them, who are you?
Right.
Because I don't know them.
Right.
And they'll say, my mother or my father or my grandfather or grandmother. And we make the connection.
And somehow or another, we're related in some way.
We're connected, yes.
Well, listen, I just have to say, we are so thrilled that you've decided to be with us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to close the show without my listeners having an opportunity to reach out to you, connect with you. If you have a Facebook page or a website or a phone number, if somebody wants to reach out and have you on their show or have you talk about what you do, how can they reach you?
Well, we do have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It's called Rap Row Historical Association. So you can always reach out to us there. You can always inbox us. We also have a website that's on WordPress. And if you Google WordPress, Rap Row Historical Association, you can get more information about the district itself as well as the association. But one of the great things we like about this website is that you can hear stories about people who actually migrated in their own words. We put them on text in the in on our website, and also there's an email address, and I don't want to give out the wrong email address. So if you just go to our website or inbox us on Facebook, and we do have a Twitter.
I don't know either.
We tweet. the young members of the Rap Road Association.
You tweet.
They tweet, and we just do the email. So. But always reach out to us. We will be out in the community because it is Black History Month, just about every event. So you can always just step up to our table and talk to us. We try to make sure we have as many people who resided on Rap Road or currently reside on Rap Road at our table so that people can hear firsthand how they came from the South to Albany, New York.
And Dr. Guy has a burning question.
No, I was really, Stephanie, you started off the interview talking about how you're doing this historical work, but also this work that's in the present about like helping people to like hold on to their homes. And I kind of wonder if you could kind of talk about how you make that link between the history and the present.
We do as much as we can. We are really fortunate that we have ran into some great historical architect firms, and we are working with families as much as they want us to work with them. It's really the family's opportunity to see what they can do with their homes. They're generational. We had our oldest member pass about 2 years ago, and he was 100, and his home and his family lineage, they had to make a decision on whether they wanted to keep the home or not. And that's pretty much what we do, is we follow the direction of the family. Whatever the family wants to do, however they want to explore keeping their home, we seek out the professionals to say, this is what you can do. If we have one home that's in pretty bad condition, and we just ask the architect, what can we do to preserve? And they are the ones who have the information, and we relay it to the family. We connect the family to the professionals, and then the family can make their general decision on what they wanna do.
I would like to just add that we are being encroached upon,
mm-hmm.
and it's becoming a real issue. I just recently went to a town board meeting in the town of Guilderland. Pyramid Corporation, which is Crossgates Mall, has made a proposal to do a 222-unit project of housing down at the end of our road, which will greatly impact our community. So we are, while we're not Guilderland, we're right there Mm-hmm. And so right now we're really pressing to discourage them from going ahead with that project. And this is something that we face constantly. The encroachment of developers wanting to buy parcels when they become available and with the intent of doing something. A lot of them want to do commercial stuff. We're not a commercially zoned historic district.
You want to keep it as housing for families, an enclave. It sounds like it's an enclave.
An enclave. Yes.
And I don't think that your experience is any different from all of the national Black historic mm-hmm. sites all around the country,
mm-hmm. yes.
particularly in places like Virginia and mm-hmm. North Carolina mm-hmm. and Louisiana, mm-hmm. where Black folks have established communities mm-hmm. and they're being encroached upon mm-hmm. By developers.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish you the best.
Thank you.
And I'm sending out prayers of defense for you that you'll be able to maintain the Rapp Road Historical Association and your space, because what you've done is you've established a landmark for us here in the Capital District. And I appreciate you for all that you do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.